When I started my life in coaching, when I started to read the books and attend workshops, I was always seeing that something is missing, and I didn't realize that until later on down the line. I said, wait a second, what I'm after is I should look for a mentor who can hold my hand and walk with me in the journey rather than just reading, reading, reading. And that could have saved me years let's say, of work. So that's why I love that movie, because that's the essence of change.
Welcome to My Movie Story. I'm your host, Brian McAleer. This is the podcast where we dive into the movies that have shaped us. Each episode, we sit down with a special guest to discuss their all-time favorite film, the movie that changed their life, and the one film they think everyone needs to see. Get ready as we journey through the cinematic worlds that make us who we are. This is My Movie Story. My guest for this episode is Ahmad Aldajani. Ahmad is a clarity coach serving overwhelmed and confused startup entrepreneurs, promising peace of mind, clarity, and resilience. His journey began at 17, stumbling through the fog of indecision, searching for a path to a clear, focused future. Ahmad now helps others on a similar journey and has a lot of great knowledge and wisdom to share. Now, here's our interview with Ahmad. Well, hi, movie lovers. Welcome to My Movie Story and welcome Ahmad to the podcast. How are you today?
I'm really good. Thank you. It's my pleasure to be here.
Yeah, thank you, mate. I've been looking forward to this conversation. We first connected a few weeks back and you told me about the movies that you wanted to cover. And it's going to be a really interesting conversation, I think. I think people will get a lot out of it. So before we get into your movies, Ahmad, tell us a little bit about yourself. Where are you from? What do you do? Yeah, what would you like to share?
So I'm from Saudi Arabia, and currently I'm a clarity coach working with startup entrepreneurs, mainly those who are transitioning from professional work to becoming an entrepreneur. My coach, and now I choose to be in movie podcast mainly because I can share my message through movies.
Yep, fantastic, really cool. So a clarity coach. So could you tell us a little bit more about that, and what kind of people do you help, and what do you help them with?
I work with overwhelmed and confused startup. Those people who are working to transition from work to becoming an entrepreneur, what I'm seeing is they are confused. They don't know what to do, where to go, where to start. There are a lot of information. And many of them feel they are wasting their time and wasting their money. So all I'm doing is working to direct them to give them the right, what I believe to be the right information, the right direction, and what they need to know before even start the journey of entrepreneurship.
Yeah, absolutely. So important, because it does get really overwhelming, you know, when you're starting a business by yourself as an entrepreneur. And, you know, I know that for myself in my own experience as well. And fantastic. And, you mentioned that movies are really important and you like to watch movies and study them. And so do you like recommend movies to your clients to watch, or do you give examples of movies in your coaching? Do you do things like that?
Honestly, I never done it. Like, I never done it before. Years ago, I was giving my clients some suggestion. But what I found down the line is that when people come to me, they come to me to hold their hand and walk with them rather than recommend things for them. Yeah. So my work mainly happened during the session. After the session is not a lot of work, because that's what people need.
Yep, absolutely. Like a mentor and a guide to be with them on the journey. Yeah, absolutely. Which I think might be a theme that could come up in one of your movies about sort of, you know, mentors and people taking these life-changing journeys. So yeah, I'm sure that will come up when we talk about your movies. All right, well, let's get into it. Let's talk about your movies.
Yeah, let's go.
Cool. All right, so on My Movie Story, anyone who's listening or watching for the first time, welcome. I'll just quickly tell you that we have three categories in our podcast. The guest chooses a film for each of these categories. Their all-time favorite, the film that changed them or their life or their perspective, and then the film that they think everyone must see in their lifetime. So for you, Ahmad, we're going to start off with the movie that is your all-time favorite. And this is a sort of an action comedy, late 90s, loved by a lot of people. I'm really excited that we're going to talk about it on this podcast, because I'm sure we're going to have a few laughs. So yeah, please tell us your first movie, Imad. What is that movie, and tell us all about it.
So it's Rush Hour.
From New Line Cinema. The fastest hands in the East meet the biggest mouth in the West.
Just received a threat on the building. We ask you, please exit the building. Do not panic. Did you hear what I just said? Get the hell out of here. The bomb in the building.
Jackie Chan.
I can't hold it anymore.
Just hang on, man. I'll be right back.
Chris Tucker.
FBI, take a picture. It's okay. Wait a minute.
Rush Hour.
We can hang my crib. I will show you my hood.
What the hell did you just say?
As a matter of fact, I watched it a couple of times, and what I love about it is the comedy and the integration between mission and comedy, because
Absolutely.
That's one of the best parts of it, where, yes, you have to have a mission, you have to earn a living, but also you have to learn to laugh as well.
Absolutely. Yeah, for sure. And it's a very funny movie because it puts these two really different guys together in this situation. And, you know, in the late 90s, you had Chris Tucker, this sort of stand-up comedian, fast talking, really sort of talks a lot of trash, real smart ass kind of thing. And then Jackie Chan was making all these awesome martial arts films, and you put them together, and it was just this recipe for, you know, comedy and action. And it was really great. And I know you're a bit younger than me, so I'm just wondering, you probably didn't see Rush Hour when it first came out in 1998. You would have been a bit young for that, maybe.
Yeah, I watched it, I believe, in the 90s.
It was
I believe
in the
I
90s.
Watched it in the yeah. It's I was I believe in yeah I believe in the 90s. That's where I watched it, because
okay.
at the time I was with my family and there were people who were watching it, so I was just watching it with them at the time.
Right. Do you remember, did you see it at the movies, or was it on video or on TV?
It was, you know, it's in the old tape, so when you have the video device, and mm-hmm. you put them
yeah.
not this, it was even before the CD, it was, you know, that the old
on tape, VHS
yeah,
tape,
the old
yeah.
tape, and yeah, that's how I watched it.
Fantastic. Yeah, so obviously it's an action comedy, it's a buddy cop kind of movie. So I'm sure there might only be a couple people out there who haven't seen Rush Hour or haven't heard about it. Just quickly tell us the story about Rush Hour. What's going on in this movie? Can you tell us?
So basically, it's about two people who are going into rescuing a girl. It's, I believe, that girl was a daughter of an important person,
mm-hmm.
And when they met the first time, where Jackie Chan, when he traveled to the US, where
yeah.
His friend didn't know whether he speaks English or he doesn't speak English or what's going on, and that's where it's all started.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's yeah.
That's how they meet. Yeah, yeah. And you've got the Jackie Chan character, Inspector Lee, I think is his name. And he's very close with the man whose daughter has been kidnapped.
Yes.
And then you've got Chris Tucker's character called Carter, I think, who works for the FBI. And he's like, as far as like a cop goes or an FBI agent goes, he breaks a lot of rules. Like he sort of doesn't really play by the rules. And he's, you know, drives like this really cool car. He doesn't look like a cop at all. But, you know, they end up having to work together. So just sort of on that genre, you know, the buddy cop genre, have you seen many other films like Rush Hour, like your Lethal Weapon and those kind of movies?
I have watched Lethal Weapon, I believe the first one.
Yep.
But it's I focused on Rush Hour mainly for the comedy. It's Lethal Weapon, it's like serious action.
Yeah.
It's compared to Rush Hour. But yeah, I watched
yep.
this movie.
Yep.
And mainly my focus is, or when I watch a movie, the first thing I'm thinking of is, what's the mission? What's the purpose of this movie? What are they trying to tell us?
Mm.
So unless I see the mission, unless I see the purpose, I wouldn't engage with the movie.
Yep.
So, and when it comes to Rush Hour, it's this balance, which is part of what I do. It's a balance where I work, but the question is, I cannot wait until I finish work and then I start laughing. Can't I just laugh and have fun during the work?
Of course.
And
yeah. Yeah, that's a really great attitude, because, you know, it's very easy to go to work and be really serious and take everything seriously.
you know, and it's important to stop during the day and laugh and have a bit of fun. So yeah, I think that's a great outlook that you've got there.
And it's also, it's, you know, it's not just the action on it, but also more importantly, the fun, the joy. And that's way more important than the action, because the movies I have watched, if there is an action and there is no laughter, usually its message is different. It's not the same as the movies who have the mission of laughter and work. So yeah, if we look at the movies who does have only action, well, the mission probably about hard work, about how to bounce back, about how to move forward, how to stand up. It's completely different than,
Absolutely. Yeah. Like an action movie with no comedy is obviously very serious, and usually it's more violent. You know, we've featured a few action movies on this podcast that are just all action, and they're really dark and serious and super violent, right? Like John Wick and movies like that. But Rush Hour was great because it really balanced the comedy and the action. So let's talk a little bit about the comedy. Obviously, just putting these two guys together was very clever, and it's really funny. What makes Rush Hour so funny and entertaining, you know, according to you? Why is this your favorite?
It's the way they express what they are doing. It's not what they are doing is kind of serious, but the way they express it in their words, in their body posture, that's where the fun is. It's they take something that's really serious and then they infuse it with a sense of humor. And at the same time, I do believe that they consider the audience. I do truly believe that they consider the audience. Otherwise, it wouldn't be that funny the way we are seeing it today. So infusion between, but actually, it's also the expression of themselves. I don't get the impression at all that they are faking what they're doing. No, this is who they are. It's just we are in a mission and we are funny. It's not we're trying to make you laugh. Mm-hmm. No, it's we are funny.
It works so well. I think it's then, like you said, they're not trying to be funny. They just are naturally funny. Like Chris Tucker is just hilarious. And Jackie Chan, like the way he fights is it's very comedic without, you know, he's not trying to be funny. It's just how he fights, right? He's quick. He's fast. He jumps around the room. He uses different furniture. Like he's the way he fights, you can tell he's like panicking and kind of afraid for his life, but he doesn't back away from the fight, you know? And if you look at some of his other movies, it's very similar. And I think it works really well in this movie, and it makes some very funny fight scenes.
Jackie Chan, probably not about what he says as much as about what he does. Mm-hmm. It's the way he do things. It makes all the difference. Like if he doesn't talk, he will still be funny.
Yeah, that's right. Just his facial expressions, and like he's walking around and he's always like, whoa, what's going on? You know, and then these guys jump out of nowhere and fight them, and he just fights them off. And they were a great team. I think Jackie Chan and Chris Tucker were it was a great pairing, you know, like a really good buddy cop
team. It is indeed.
Absolutely. And have you seen the sequels to the film?
Yes, I've seen the second and third. I believe now they're working in the fourth one. I'm not sure if that's true, but I believe I have come across something like that.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, at the time of this recording, it's the middle of May 2024. So for those watching, whatever point you're watching this, maybe Rush Hour 4 has already come out. Maybe you've seen it. At the time of this recording, it hasn't been made yet. But yeah, I heard that as well, that it was in the works. Which is, it'll be interesting to see how they do that, because obviously Jackie Chan's a lot older now. He can still move, he can still fight, but what's gonna bring them together this time? You know, it'll be really interesting. And what did you think of the sequels, Rush Hour 2 and Rush Hour 3? Did you like them as much as the first one? Not as much. Like, what did you?
I like them, but not as much as the first one. It's mm-hmm. the first one, the energy was completely different. You can watch it again and again, and I will still laugh at it. I will still have fun with it.
Yep.
The second, yes, I watched it just to see what's next.
Yep.
But yeah, it didn't get my attention as much as the first one.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I think the second one tried to be a little too serious and still has some funny moments, but it was kind of, it was a bit more serious and darker. Yeah. And then I like the third one. I think the third one went back to its comedy roots a little bit more. You know, there's a great scene in the part three when they go into the dojo, and you know, Carter's talking to, you know, the blind man. He says, "Who are you?" He's like, "I am you." And then there's that is me and you, and like this banter just goes back and forth, and it's hilarious.
You know, but
yeah, go ahead.
You know, in that scene when he meets the old wise person, it's when he said, "Who are you?" And he said, "I am you." Fundamentally speaking, in spiritual teaching, he meant it. It was like for us, yeah, it's funny, but if I look at it from different perspective, he mean it. It's like we're one and the same.
Yeah, but that's right.
Yeah, it's the way it was expressed. It was funny.
Yeah, it was funny and it was very clever. Yeah, I like that scene a lot. Yeah, and in the first film, would you say that you have a couple of favorite scenes or one sort of favorite moment in the movie?
Yeah, definitely. It's the first one I have, when Jackie Chan arrived to the US. That was, to me, it was hilarious. It was funny. It's it was one of the best scenes in the movie. Yeah. And the second one is when it was at the end of the movie. There was two scenes where the first one is when Jackie Chan was holding himself in on the pipe, like he was in the air. Yeah. And he said, "Okay, like do something." And Tucker Carlson said, "Well, it's let me go and grab someone." And then he was, "I'm just joking." It to me, it was funny, yeah, but it was,
yeah,
yeah. It's that part. It got my attention.
Yeah, so that's funny. And it's very funny.
And the third one, when Tucker went outside to save the girl, where when he went to the guy, was holding a gun. Mm-hmm. And Tucker said, "Well, he got the gun from the guy," and then, yep, Tucker laughter that made me laugh so hard.
Yeah,
because it wasn't what he did as much as his laughter after he got the gun from the guy.
Yeah, very funny. Yeah, it was great, and it was a smash hit. It did really well. Obviously, it had a couple of sequels. And a part four on the way at some point, so or maybe it's already out who knows by the time whoever's watching this. But yeah, great film, really funny. You know, I rewatched it recently as well in preparation for this interview, and yeah, it's still funny. It still makes me laugh as well, and it's just great to, you know, they don't really make movies like that anymore, you know, those kind of action cop movies, you know, where you pair these two guys together who are completely different, but they, you know, they worked really well together. So it was a lot of fun. Yeah, cool.
Yeah,
awesome. Well, we've got a couple more films to talk about, Ahmad, so we might move on to the second movie, and this is the film that you think everyone must see in their lifetime. And this is an interesting category, because sometimes people bring movies to this category and it's like, this is a movie you have to see, you know, because it's important. It touches on an important issue or topic. And sometimes you might only want to watch that film once, you know, like, for example, we've featured Schindler's List on the podcast, and a lot of people can only watch that movie once, you know, and I've watched it twice now because I had to watch it a second time for this podcast. And that was difficult. That's a difficult watch, but an important film to watch. Now, the film you want to talk about, though, I'll let you introduce it, but I guess it's part of the sort of super world of superheroes, and some listeners might not,
yes,
like superhero movies. We're not here to, you know, sell superhero movies or say you've got to watch this movie, but this one, obviously to you, this one stands out for a very special reason, and it's probably, yeah, it's an interesting choice. So I'm going to let you now tell us, what is this film that everybody needs to see, and why do they need to see it?
It's Doctor Strange.
I am death and pain. You'll die protecting this world.
I can't do this.
There is no other way.
I've spent so many years peering through time,
looking for you.
And why I believe everyone should watch it, because I would say the essence of change. It's where Dr. Strange fell apart, and then he started to look for answers. And then later on, he found a mentor, and then his mentor took him by held his hand, and then he transformed his life, and then he came back to the world to with a mission. To me, that's a critical, because when I started my life in coaching, when I started to read the books and the workshops, I was always seeing that something is missing. And I didn't realize that until later on down the line. I said, wait a second, what I'm after is I should look for a mentor who can hold my hand and walk with me in the journey rather than just reading, reading, reading. And that could have saved me years of work. Yep. So that's why I love that movie, because that's the essence of change.
Yeah, you've described it really well. Yeah. And he's he came along in the, I guess he became part of the Avengers, as we know, Doctor Strange, and plays a very important part in the, you know, Avengers Infinity War and Endgame, has a very crucial part because obviously he has the Time Stone. Thanos is trying to find all the Time Stones. But the character of Dr. Stephen Strange, who he is now as Dr. Strange with this cape and all these mystic powers, is a world away from who he is when we first meet him in the very first film. So for those who may not have seen Doctor Strange or be familiar with the character, can you tell us a little bit about his character? Who is he when we meet him at the start of the film? And what happens to him that makes him become a superhero?
At the start of the film, he was a doctor, like a normal doctor. But then something happened to him that he wasn't able to, I believe he wasn't able to move his hand. He wasn't able to function anymore. And he was looking for answers. And that's where his story is started. And then when he was looking for answer, he met a person who I believe was his client. And then, but his client was, he was recovered from illness or something that he shouldn't recover from. And he was asking him, okay, why, how did you recover and why? And then he directed him to the other place where he found his mentor. And that was the beginning of the story.
Yeah.
And as a matter of fact, this is what we call the hero's journey, although I'm presenting this concept carefully, but still within the context of how the hero's journey is presented today, this is how it is, where someone someone's life is falling apart, and then they bounce back, and then they start to look for answers, and they meet a mentor, and then the mentor holds their hands from their lives, and then they reintegrate with the world, with a mission to transform the world, or let's say to transform a specific targeted audience, to be concise.
That's right. Yeah. Now you've explained it really well. Yeah. And the hero's journey is a very common storytelling arc that we see in a lot of superhero movies and movies like Harry Potter, Star Wars, The Matrix, you know, and we've covered some of those movies in the podcast. So yeah, the hero's journey, it's everywhere and it comes up quite a lot. Yeah. And, yeah, it's an interesting transformation that Dr. Strange goes through, because like you said, we meet him at the start of the film. He's this brilliant surgeon and he's very full of himself. He's, you know, got incredible hands. That's really his power, is his hands and how he's able to operate and heal people really quickly. And he sort of takes things for granted. And then, like you said, he has this accident. He loses the ability to use his hands like he did. And then there's no science or medicine or technology that can really heal him. And he's a man of science, right? So then he has to start thinking outside the box a little bit. And this is where he goes from a man of science to a man of, you know, spirituality and powers and, you know, what if. And then that takes him on this journey. And then he meets, like you said, he meets his mentor. Tell us a little bit about that's part of the story, where he meets the mentor and how he kind of evolves into this superhero. Like, how does that all happen?
Yeah. So when he met his client who recovered, and then he sent him to the other city, what happened is this: arrogance is that if there is something that will, I would say, to change someone with arrogance, I truly believe is not possible until they learn to drop it, to let it go. Arrogance means I don't want to learn. I know everything all of the time, and you have nothing to offer me. You have nothing to teach me. It's So when he traveled and he met his teacher, he was so arrogant. Yeah. And then they kicked him out, actually. But his persistence went in the door when he was asking for help again and again and again, and then they allowed him to enter. That's where he started to let go of his arrogance. Mm. As a matter of fact, that expressed one of the best principles in change, which is this: when you meet people who can help you change, you have to be humble. You have to let go of your arrogance. Otherwise, they will not teach you. Because when you let go of arrogance, you bring the best out of them. Teach me, and then I'll change myself. I made the decision to change. I take full responsibility for the change. But I need direction. I need clarity. Yeah. And until he let go of arrogance, then they allowed him, and then his journey began. Yeah. As a matter of fact, later on, he started to show even not just interest but enthusiasm. Where later he started to move on with emotions, with energy, where he started to read books. Mm. He started to even develop himself. He doesn't need someone to tell him what to do. He was doing things himself. As a matter of fact, he went above and beyond what he was learning.
Yep.
But all of this, all of it, if I look at the movie, all of it happens because this single idea, which is he let go of his arrogance. Yep. That changed everything.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah, that's you've put that really well, you know, and that was the major flaw of his character, wasn't it? He was very arrogant. He was very proud. He was brilliant. He was a brilliant surgeon, but it was like he didn't look at any other option. Like, he wouldn't question anything. It's just like, this is it. And it was that arrogance that led him to have his accident, right? So, you know, he had to let go of that pride in order to understand the power that he was being given. You know, it was the solution to his problem, but then it was like, let's take that brilliance, that brilliant mind you have, in this new power, you know, we now need your help. And then he steps up and becomes a hero, which is fantastic. Yeah. And just the theme that you're talking about there, I'm guessing, like, in your own journey, Ahmad, like, you spoke about mentors, and you spoke about, you know, change and how you have to let go and be open to new things in order to grow and develop. In your own experience, where has this shown up in your life? Like, have you had mentors? Is there things you've had to let go of in order to grow and be successful? How do you relate to that?
Definitely. I have a couple of them. I have a couple of people who held my hand. And as a matter of fact, before I was teaching people to read a lot. And later on, when you are getting mentored, then later on, fill what's missing with books and workshops. But you start with a mentor who knows the journey. That's number one. To go back to your question, yes, I had a couple of them, and I was arrogant at the time. Okay, to be honest, I was arrogant at the time, and I do have a strong arrogance. Now it becomes more of a confidence. So it becomes confidence. But at the time, I was arrogance, until I meet one of those people, one whom I consider could be a mentor. And then at the time, I have to take one step back. And then my question is, what if this person knows something that I don't know and can help me? So in a way, it was kind of only selfish motive, where what can I learn from this person? But then down the line, I learned the principle of reciprocity. It's about learning, about getting, but the question is, what are you giving in return? It's getting. Well, what's in it for the other person? Otherwise, they are losing their energy, which is this idea of just taking, or getting something without giving something in return. It stems from the sense of entitlement or arrogance, where, okay, well, because I'm entitled, so you should give me, and I shouldn't give you anything in return. Is that life function in the principle of reciprocity? You have to give and you have to receive. This is with everything. I don't believe in free things, because even in free things, you are giving away your time, you are giving away your attention. It's not free. Free means probably you don't pay money, but you pay something in return.
You're paying something. So, yeah,
I did meet those people, and then later on, I started to become humble a little bit more. Yep. But this is the thing, I'm selective. So being humble, it doesn't mean I'll be friend with everyone, I'll be open for everyone. No, but to be humble means I have to be selective. But when I interact with someone, I have to think in terms, what's the exchange here? What can I get, and what can I give in return?
Yeah.
It's always I have to remove the entitlement out, yes, of the way. It has. It's literally speaking.
Mm-hmm.
It's,
yeah, that's a really
entitlement
smart way.
Is, yeah, kind of. I would say it's not a struggle. It's more than a struggle. It's a block that prevents people from change. The moment someone decides that I am entitled, it's what they're saying. There is no way to change. And yes, so that's my story with mentors and teachers.
Yeah, fantastic. Yeah, really, some really great advice there. You know, some really good wisdom, and the way and how you talk about that, and that, like, that's what you relate this movie Doctor Strange to as well. So, for anyone watching this who's like, superhero movies, nah, not for me. But Doctor Strange is different. It's different from the rest. You know, it's not Thor and Iron Man smashing cities and flying around. You know, Doctor Strange is different. It's a bit deeper. You know, it touches on things like mysticism, you know, certain religions, certain spiritualities, very, very unique special effects. You know, when I was watching it, I'm like, oh, I can sort of similar to Inception in a lot of ways, you know, with the bending of reality and all that kind of stuff.
Yes.
A bit like Inception, a bit like The Matrix. And he's a different kind of superhero because, you know, he's learning all the time as his powers grow. He's continuously learning, like, what can I do here? What can I achieve? You know, and it's a fascinating portrayal of that theme and the hero's journey. So a really good choice of superheroes. Just quickly, though, it is a Marvel film, so we do need to, you know, acknowledge that. Some of your other favorite sort of superhero films, Marvel or not, you know, what else do you like in that category?
I have watched a couple of them, but I liked Avengers. Avengers, they have a mission, but what I like about it is the teamwork. It's it got my attention, but probably nothing made me interested to watch more than Doctor Strange, because it's like I was seeing myself in the movie.
Yeah.
And that's why it's kind of, I can relate to what he was doing. I said, okay, like, there's something here.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And that's the thing with superhero movies in general, is like, we can all relate to one of those superheroes at different, yes, points in our life. You know, like, when I was a kid, it was all about Spider-Man, you know, and then as a teenager, I got into like Batman, you know, and then in my adult years, when Marvel came along, I really resonated with Captain America. I really liked his character, you know, and yeah, so I think at whatever age and stage you are at life, whatever's going on for you, you can find a superhero film with a certain problem, a certain power, and a certain journey that you can relate to. And I think, yeah, Doctor Strange is it's a really interesting one, you know, and I like his character, and, you know, I like his standalone films, and obviously he shows up in Spider-Man No Way Home and the last two Avengers movies. So yeah, he's a cool character. So hopefully we see more of him in the future, which would be really cool. And I really like how you spoke about the film and that topic. I think it's given people a lot to think about, you know, about finding a mentor, letting go of self-entitlement, letting go of arrogance, and being open to change and accepting, like, I don't know everything, I've got more to learn here. I think that's a great message that you've shared with us. So thank you. Thank you for that. And now we've got one final film, Imad, if we can move on to that. And this is a very important film to you. It's just a very important film in general. Again, another film that was introduced to me on this podcast, and I got to watch it for the first time. And I'll just say before you introduce it, like, for a film made in 1940, very bold, very brave to tackle this subject, and it did it in a very interesting way. And as we talk about the film, I'm sure there'll be a lot we can take from it in terms of how this happens in the world today. So anyway, yes, please tell us, what is this film you think changed your perspective? What is that movie? Tell us a bit about it.
It's Gaslight.
Paul, don't look at me like that.
Let me never look at your back. Come.
It's part of my journey. In my journey, I had a lot of things I have to work on. We're changing beliefs, working on emotions, new skills. I have to learn new things. But down the line, there are still things didn't make that much sense to me. So as I was looking around, I came across this concept. Why? Or how did I come across this concept? It's simple, because I'm a researcher. I love to research. And always, to me, is giving up is not an option. It's even if I decide to give up, my belief system will not allow that to happen. So yeah. I'll give up today. Well, probably say, okay, I'll just give up. I'll find myself the next day in the morning. Well, I said, okay, yesterday I gave up. Today I have to go. I have to get up and do what I have to do. It's my belief system is designed to prevent total giving up. It's because there is a way to bounce back. Yeah. And so while I was researching, I came across this concept, which is gaslight. And when I started to read about it and learn about it, it got my attention very quickly. It's because I was going through that situation where I was hurt. I have problem, but I don't know that I have problem. Then I started to analyze the situation where I started to ask the question where if I am in pain, is it necessary that someone to tell me I am in pain to believe that I'm in pain? That's when I started to ask this question. It changed everything, because what gaslight is someone manipulating someone else's reality, where they make you deny your reality, where it's like you see something as, let's say, as a red, but then they tell you it's not red, it's white. Yeah. And probably there is a logic behind it. There is a persuasion behind it. And in many cases, you end up believing them and denying your reality, denying what you are watching, denying what you experience. It's like, when I grasp this concept, I integrate it into what I offer people immediately. As a matter of fact, when I work with people, it's almost always, without them knowing, they've been gaslighted somehow, somewhere during their life, but they're unaware. It's like we see people who are, let's say, who are hurt, who have problems in their life, who struggle. And what will they say? Okay, well, it's all right. It's okay. Or let's add the positive side, things on this thing. But then I'll ask myself, no, you have problem. You got to deal with it. Problem is a problem. It's if I touch a hot pot, it's still a hot pot. And if I touch it, it will hurt me. I can say it doesn't hurt. I can say it's not hot. But that will not change the fact that it's still hot and it will hurt me. I cannot deny that we don't have gravity. Whether I believe it or not, gravity is still there and I have to deal with it. Yeah. And that it's life-changing concept once you understand that problem is a problem and solution is solution. What's red is red. What's white is white.
Yep. Yeah, very well put. Very well put. And obviously for people watching and listening, this will be familiar with gaslighting. And, you know, they may have experienced it themselves or they may know someone who has. And I guess, you know, we can just say if anyone is experiencing it or fears that they are experiencing it, it's never something that anyone should ever have to put up with. Like you said, you don't just be like, oh, well, that's just how it is. It's like, no, because the person doing it will keep doing it and keep doing it. And it gets worse and worse and worse, right? So, you know, if it's happening to anyone, reach out. There's always help nearby, you know. So hopefully anyone who feels that way will you know, realize that it's not okay, you know, that you can get some help. Yep. And just coming back to the film now. So what really amazed me about this film is it deals with this topic in a very, you know, realistic way, very confronting. And it's a film that comes all the way back to 1940. Like it's nearly 100 years old, right? And I did a little research on this film and it was based on a book or a play, I think. And it was remade again a few years later. It's been done a couple of times, I believe, but you chose the original version from 1940. So could you speak a little bit about the film? Like who are the characters and what is the situation and how is this gaslighting happening in this movie?
So the gaslight happened is when a person married to someone or met someone and then he started to manipulate her reality, where he was telling her that what you are seeing, what you are experiencing is not correct. Probably you didn't hear that voice. Probably you didn't hear that noise. As a matter of fact, in that house, there was, I believe his grandmother died in that house. And then when she moved into the house, she said, okay, I hear these noises. I hear this. And he said, no, you are not hearing anything. It's everything is okay. And that's where I started to doubt herself. As a matter of fact, I truly believe it's hard, if it's either hard or even not possible to destroy someone else's self-confidence without gaslighting them.
Yeah.
To destroy someone else's self-confidence, they have to believe that what they experience is not correct. They have to doubt their personal experience and believe in what someone else says more than what they are experiencing. And then that's where their self-confidence start to shrink and getting destroyed. To go back to the movie, that's where it is. When she moved to the house and he started to tell her anything is not correct, what she was experiencing is wrong. That's where she started to forget what's going on there. And that's what's all the movie is around, this idea, until the end of the movie where there was a police when he intervened, and then she started to recover to say, no, this is what I experience, and what I experience is correct and it's true. And that's where it seems that's where the recovery happened to her.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and the man doing this to the woman is very sinister, very, you know, malicious, and he's just not a nice person whatsoever. And when you realize what he's up to, what he's trying to find, I mean, we won't spoil the movie because I think a lot of people listening to this now will probably go and watch it, and I'll share the link to where you can find this movie for anyone who's curious. But yeah, once you realize what he's trying to do, then you just want him to get caught. You want this to end. And his wife,
I believe Bella.
Bella, yes. And despite everything that Bella's going through, she remains very strong, and she holds on to that hope. You know, she holds on to that hope that, hang on, maybe it's not me. Maybe there is something else going on here. You know, and yeah, it portrays this topic in a very candid and confronting way, which I thought for 1940 was very, you know, really impressive. And we see this issue explored in films, other films sometimes as well. One film that comes to mind for me is The Girl on the Train with Emily Blunt. That deals with the issue of gaslighting as well, because she's in an abusive relationship. And she questions, is what I'm seeing or hearing real? And then, you know, she finds out later in the film that she was being gaslighted as well. Yeah, so just coming back to that topic a little bit, like being a coach, you may work with some people who are experiencing this, who may be at risk of being gaslighted. What advice might you have for them on what they can do to help themselves and reach out for help? And, you know, not let their confidence get taken away. Like, what are things that individual could do to help themselves?
The first thing I will do is to acknowledge that what I experience is true 100% all of the time. So to me, what I experience is, what if I'm wrong? Well, I'll acknowledge it later and revise, but it will be my personal conclusion. Even if someone guides me, even if someone directs me, even if someone helps me, I have to realize that I have to realize it through my personal experience. I don't believe something just because someone else has told me to believe it. No, I have to experience it myself. So this number one, start to acknowledge your personal experience. As a matter of fact, even when I'm working with people, sometimes they ask me a question. Okay, this is what happened to me. What do you think? And then I'll ask them, what do you think? And they will give me the answer. Like, to me, they already know the answer, but they are doubting themselves. It's somewhere they learn to doubt the answer. I said, okay, now you have the answer.
Yeah.
And thus, even if I tell you what you are doing is wrong, you shouldn't believe me, because that's your personal experience. You should trust your personal experience 100% all of the time. That's number one. Number two, upgrade yourself. Rise to the level of the problem. It's not changing it into positive. It's not trying to make it softer, but to rise to its level. And this is what we call to be anti-fragile, where it's I'm not running away from the problem, but the harder the problem becomes, the harder I become. And at some point, I'll be stronger than the problem. Now, well, life will present me with with a bigger problem, and they'll do the same thing. I'll rise to the next problem and next problem, and this is how it works. And in the long run, I believe if someone can continue to rise to the level of their problems and solving these problems, they will develop unshakable self-confidence, where all the gaslight, all the self-doubt will start to dissipate.
100% agree.
And these are my advice for people who have such... This is my experience. If someone have been gaslighted or they feel self-doubt, that's where you start to trust your experience and deal with reality.
Listen to your instinct and your intuition, because it's usually right. Some problems are really hard, but ignoring them, pretending that they're not there, running away from them just makes the problem get worse. So, I think it's, like you said, rise to the level of the problem. That's really good advice. And then there's always going to be problems in life, right? You know, you solve one problem and then another problem's just around the corner. But I guess we have to train ourselves to become problem solvers, right? Because there will always be problems in life. Sometimes we can coast along for a while. Things are good. There isn't really any problems. Happy days, right? All of a sudden, tragic life event can happen. We can lose a job. We can lose money. There could be, some kind of an event that happens around us and we're forced to deal with it, right? So, like you said, rise to the level, do your best to solve that problem. And then the more problems you solve, the more confident you get, right? The more problems you're able to solve. Which I guess, we definitely speak the same language. You and I, we're both coaches and we understand that. And easier said than done, but knowing that there's always somebody out there that can help you, and I'm sure that all the people that you've coached have really benefited from your wisdom. So they'd be lucky to have you as a coach, I think. So
thank you.
Yeah. Good stuff, mate. Good stuff. Yeah. And just as we sort of, wrapping up our conversation today, Matt, it's been a fascinating talk about your films and the different messages and topics and themes. And I'm sure you've got some ideas on this. And I like to ask this question for some of my guests is the future of movies, and obviously movies are important socially, emotionally, they can address issues like we've just talked about with gaslighting. We can identify ourselves in movies. So sometimes movies work, sometimes they don't. So I guess the future of movies, what kind of movies would you like to see get made or less of or more of? What would you like to see or what are you looking forward to when it comes to the future of movies?
I would love to see a movie solve real life problems. It's now I can see that a lot of movies are mission driven, but to me, it's not enough to be mission driven. It's you have to address people's life problems. It's like I can have a mission, but if it doesn't solve people's problem, then what's the point of expressing it in the first place? Yeah. So in that sense, when I have a mission and it solves a real problems, then it's worth people's time. So now I can invite people to watch it and say, okay, it's worth your time, it's worth your money, it's worth your attention. And that's how I see it. It's mainly solving real problems rather than just mission-driven movies.
Yeah, absolutely. Really smart, right? Yeah. Because I think, when we're going through a hard time or we're feeling a bit down or a bit lonely, what do? We turn to stories. We turn to movies. We turn to TV shows. We turn to books to, recognize a character that we can relate to, or to dream of a better life. Or we watch a movie about a situation that we're experiencing and we see the character get through it and solve it and change. And that can be like inspiring. So I think, it'd be great to see more movies where real life problems, ordinary everyday people solving them and not running away and not hiding from them, but actually solving them. And they've got something to teach us, those kind of movies, I think. Yeah. And any other honorable mentions, any other movies that maybe you thought about bringing to the podcast, or just any other movies that come to mind that you really enjoy?
I enjoyed Avatar. I love Avatar because it's unique. And it's a real expression of creativity.
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's been mentioned a few times on this podcast, and You know, we've seen two Avatar films and we've got a few more to come apparently over the next decade to keep us entertained, which will be great. So lots of good movies to look forward to. Well, once again, Matt, this has been a fantastic conversation. Really appreciate you bringing your knowledge and your wisdom and your really great, messages to the podcast through these movies. And hopefully that encourages people to go and check out Gaslight, and talk about this really important issue, because we're seeing this, it's a form of abuse, it's a form of domestic and family violence that is happening all around the world, and we need to talk about it. We need to let people know it's not okay and that they're not alone, so hopefully that helps some people who might watch that film to look at it differently. Yeah, so really, really great conversation. Thank you very much for being on My Movie Story. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you. It's my pleasure to be here.
All right, thanks. You take care.
Thanks for tuning into My Movie Story. We hope you enjoyed today's episode with our special guest and the movies that we talked about. Don't forget to hit that like button, subscribe to our YouTube channel, and follow us on Spotify or your favorite podcast platform. Your support means a lot to us. You can also stay connected with us on social media for all the latest updates and special content, and you'll find our page on Facebook. Until next time, take care and enjoy the movies. See you on the next episode.